Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about the books we'd like to recommend.
And today we are joined by two of our teen volunteers who signed up to read books and come review them. Lacey is here with us for the first time. What grade are you in, Lacey?
I'm going to be in 12th grade.
Okay. And Kathy is rejoining us.
She's back.
Yes. We didn't scare off the first time. I'm so glad. Anyway, I'm really excited about the books that you guys brought. I don't know if one of you wants to talk about.
Do we have a volunteer to go to go first?
You want to go? I know, I just totally put you guys on the spot.
I was about to say, I guess it's kind of fair if Lacey goes first because Kathy did have to go first.
Yes. She truly went first. So. I know you are bringing a fairy tale retelling of the 12 Dancing Princesses?
Yeah. At first, I was looking at through the list of books that y'all sent me, and I was like, And then I saw that it was based off that, and it's one of, like, my favorite fairy tales, where they all, like, go off dancing, and their shoes break, and everybody's like, why are the shoes breaking? So I was, like, very intrigued, and then it also included, like, there's multiple deaths going on. And
it's yes.
Like, ooh, murder mystery with dancing involved.
Truly, we can have it all.
Sounds like a true emo music video.
In a good way.
Can you tell us a little bit about the book? Like, who is the main character? What's the setting like?
If you can't remember names, you can just describe them.
So the main character is Annalee, and she's not necessarily the middle, but she's not the first child born. And at first it's like she doesn't feel, because there's been so much death recently, and they all are on this island.
Yeah.
Where it's tradition for them to go and wear black for like a year. And each year another person keeps dying, so they just wear deeper, darker black. The stepmother is from not on the island. She's like off in the mainland. And she's like, I'm pregnant. And she announces this after the funeral. I was like, what the heck?
That does seem like a show stealer.
Yeah, for a funeral. Like,
so announcing it at a wedding. Just died. So then it goes through. All the other sisters are like horrified at how the stepmother just like completely twisted it. I was like disgusted as well. I was like, how dare you? And so then, but the sister's like, well, she's probably in a lot of stress, so I'm gonna help her. So Annalee, she helps the stepmother through pains and aches, and she's like nice to her, and the stepmother kind of is very thankful to her about it. And eventually they decide to host a ball for the triplet for the sisters. There's three triplets. And during this ball, she meets this one guy who... No, she didn't meet him there. So
it's okay.
she went to the dock because her sister, that the first death that happened, her sister fell off a cliff. And she was like, I feel like she was murdered. Because
many people have died. Like, it feels... We can't be that unlucky.
The town is like, they're all cursed.
That's fair. If I knew someone who had 12 kids and...
They all started dying.
Like, eight of them were dead, I would be like, this something is wrong. Like, who knows?
So she goes looking at the docks, and she goes to ask the fisherman that found her dead sister's body. And she ends up meeting this guy who's like, the sun and the stars have met and created this individual. And he's not from the island, or he says he's from the mainland, but he doesn't really give that much description of where he's from or his family or anything. So he's like really nice to her, and it's the first guy that's actually like talked to her and is not afraid. But then the townspeople see her and they're like, that's the cursed sister. So then she runs away. And so then the triplets ball comes up, and she sees him again, and she really likes him. A feud happens because there's this little ball celebrating the triplets' birthday, and then suddenly a friend from the past that all the sisters got along with suddenly comes back, and he's like, and apparently he had a crush on her, but she doesn't feel that way towards him. She thought of him more as a brother. So then there's like a jealous feud going between the two guys.
Okay.
Is the dancing like magical like it was in the original fairy tale?
That's not even where the dancing is. It is magical though.
Yeah.
It's just whenever the magic part comes in at the ending, because that hit me really hard, because it's not actually them going to, like, a ball or anything.
Mm-hmm.
They are cursed because the stepmom is from, like, this ritualistic people of the bones kind of thing.
Okay.
Clan. And she wanted to marry the father, so she made a deal with the trickster god, and he basically cursed the entire family and killed one of them. He was killing the mother, then the older sisters, and then finally the trickster god teamed up with, like, a dream demon.
Of course.
The dream demon kept making all the girls see things, and so in their sleep they were dancing.
Okay.
And the boy that she found is actually the son of a goddess and a sailor. Both of them fall in love. He really loves her, but then he disappears. But he's still, like, on the other side trying to help her. And eventually the stepmother, she's like, starts giving birth. And she gives birth to a dead baby because she had twins. And one of them comes out dead. And she's like, how dare you kill my... She starts screaming and shouting, how dare you kill my son? How dare you kill my son? And then the god comes up and he's like, I used your son to give life to my son. So basically she gave birth to a trickster god's son. And then the trickster god, like, takes the woman, takes the mother, and they disappear. And the house is set on fire. So it's just the rest of the sisters that are alive. They're all left to stand there and watch their house burn.
Oof, really feels like a win-win scenario for everyone in the story. Yeah, I don't see.
Okay, so I have so many questions, but I also want to get to Kathy's
the complete
book,
opposite
which is
side of
completely
the.
Completely different. So you are bringing Fences, and if I heard you right, it's on the summer reading list this year,
yes.
Or
okay, for my school in Highlands, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And this one was published, it's a play.
Mm-hmm.
It was written in, was it the 80s?
Probably the 80s, because it was the winner of the 1987 Pulitzer.
Oh, okay. How about you tell us about the book?
The book basically centers around a main cast that is part of a close circle around Troy Maxson. And he's basically a man that's been working hard ever since he was 14. Because he got kicked out by his dad, like, unfairly and stuff like that. So he basically started to try to raise a family, and now it's just jumping forward to the progress that he's made and how he's, like, going to act as a husband, as a father, as a brother and stuff like that. But it basically kind of is a tragedy because while at the beginning of the story shows that he's a charismatic character that knows how to joke around and stuff like that, he kind of evolves as a person and becomes more of, like, people you know in real life, not in a good way either. It's more like unloyal partner, toxic parent, and brother that is, like, not there for his own, like, siblings and stuff like that. It was just a stage filled with real life events that's told in such a convincing way that you can help but feel for every single character and try to understand where everyone was coming from.
Mm-hmm. What do you think caused him to depart from, because it sounded like he was originally on a promising trajectory. Mm-hmm. What made him kind of start to deviate from that?
His career, basically, he was very passionate about baseball, but he was passed up and he was forever bitter about that. So he tried to settle down with a woman that he fell madly in love with named Rose. And he basically had children and took care of children with her for around 18 years until it came out that he was not the most loyal partner. And it just, while he did tell her the truth, it just was very devastating for the family because he also had a son named Corey. And Corey was trying to make his father proud, trying to become an athlete like him, trying to be a football star. And his father basically got in his way and said, I don't want you to go through the same thing I do, so I know best, and I'm going to make sure that you never play football, because you're just going to get passed up anyway. And obviously, people try to talk some sense into him, Rose especially. She's like, he's going to get a chance as long as you let him try.
Mm-hmm.
But Troy, for some reason, decides that he knows best, and as long as he gives his child food, shelter, and everything that, like, you're supposed to give a child, then they have no place to argue. And it's kind of a very controversial topic because this book is kind of anyone that has a family. So if you're a child reading this, you relate to Corey. If you're an adult reading this, you might relate to Troy. if you're more of like an older generation person, you might just see this in your own children. It's more of just so realistic drama than anything else.
And it's very short too. Mm-hmm. So all of this is happening like pretty speedily, I would imagine, especially because it's a play.
Mm-hmm. It was only 101 pages, and because the font is like bigger than Times New Roman 12, it was a really quick read.
Okay.
Now, even though I have a very strong suspicion why this was selected for reading, do you have ideas? Does it feel still relevant to a modern audience? Because isn't the setting like the 1960s?
Yeah.
I think the moon landing was around 1965, and Jim Crow laws were abolished in 1964, and even before that. And as of right now, you know that there's obviously movements that pertain to Black Lives Matter and more of just how we've discriminated against the Black community. This is more relevant because it humanizes everyone in the story, even Troy, who was a subpar husband and a subpar brother and a subpar father. And it just kind of showed what his mindset was, because while Rose, once she had discovered his infidelity, she had gone on this tangent as women who've been betrayed do, and she only had like one or two pages where she was just like, you should have stayed in my bed, you should have loved me, you should have cared for me, and you should have just done what I did and swallowed my feelings inside and have like stayed loyal to me, but instead you didn't. And she's different from a lot of other stories where the woman stays with a man after he cheats because she feels like she has no other choice. They flash forward after he reveals his infidelity, and it shows that they aren't in contact anymore, so she basically has a lot of self-respect for herself and she cuts it off. I don't know how she financially manages, but it just shows that she does.
Interesting. How long of a time period does this cover? Like, because it feels like you're getting kind of a slice of life, or is it several years?
It's like a slice of life. It's basically like maybe a timeline of a few months, maybe even a few weeks at most.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's when the most drama happens, when everything gets revealed about whenever Rose and Troy's marriage falls apart, whenever his relationship with Corey falls apart, when he loses his relationship with his brother Gabriel, which is a war veteran who basically was paid out by the government and was responsible for Troy's way of life as of right now, because if he didn't have the down payment, he wouldn't have been able to have any of this.
And what did Troy do for a living?
Troy was a garbage man.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it feels like both of these books start in like a very tense place. One of them with a death and one of them with infidelity and
racial tensions.
Racial tensions and all of that.
The story actually didn't start off on a bad note. It was more of just like when times were good and when it showed. The reason why it was a tragedy was more because they showed the loving and caring side of him with his wife and his son, and just like with the whole family, it showed the good times until everything fell apart.
Okay.
So was it basically systemic racism that kind of brought him down?
It was more of just like he fell into the mindset of times will never change and history will repeat itself, but at the same time he was just a very low empathy character, so he didn't realize why his infidelity was problematic or why stripping his child of his dreams was horrible or why signing his brother off into a mental hospital was bad.
So he was operating on, like, but it's the right thing to do.
It's
from my opinion, so yeah. I don't understand why you're so upset.
Yeah, he wants to do right by people, and he wants to educate everyone around him to do that. But he also is in his own little world where, because he struggled so much and because he's the man of the house, he has to do certain things and he has to act a certain way to establish his role in the world. And anyone that threatens that, or anyone that goes outside of those parameters, is kind of it's more either shut down or he just kind of is more crazy than his brother who got half of his brains blown out. Like the way Rose described how she felt about the infidelity, she was like, I'm hurt, I'm damaged, you took 18 years of my life and you wasted it. And he was like, but I was on first base. I stood on first base for 18 years. And I saw second base, and I just decided I have to go.
Oh my god!
It was really bad, and it like
usually not good to associate infidelity with improving your station in life.
Right. Yes, and he was talking about how like it relieved his stress so much, how it made him feel better as a person, and how it just like made him like lose all care in the world, and it was just so good for him.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't consider the pain and embarrassment his wife and children had to go through, which is why his son lost any respect he held for his father.
Why do you think it's called Fences?
It's called Fences because Troy Maxson and his son Cody were both tasked by their mother to build a fence around the backyard, or front yard, I believe. It's one of the yards.
Yeah, a yard.
And the conversation with his best friend is, Troy was kind of confused. He was basically saying, why does my wife even want a fence? It's not like anyone's going to come in. And Bono, his best friend, stated that maybe she's not trying to keep people out, but maybe she's trying to keep people in. And that's when Bono convinces Troy to at least tell Rose of his infidelity, or at least stop being a womanizer.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's a pretty cool metaphor.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so
back to
It's really like a big jump.
But at the same time, this is all very, very heavy stuff, dude.
It is, yeah. Most of your family dying can do that. Did the book feel dark? Because I mean, I've read it before, so I feel like that's like a little bit of a cheat question. But when you were reading it, did it feel like heavy or dark?
It did have its like deep moments, but mm-hmm. then it would be like whenever I get past like a good moment or something, and mm-hmm. then something immediately bad happened, I felt like there was a mask. It's like, here's a mask we're going to show you, and now we're going to take the mask off
yes.
and show you the real thing.
Like you'd have a moment where it was like a nice time, and then they were like, oh, remember most of your dead family. Yes, very bad.
Lacey, where was the dad in all this? Did he die?
He did die? Yes.
Okay.
I think he did die.
Because I was like, how
well,
the heck did he
die?
I think it's a little bit of a spoiler.
Oh, okay.
Because
okay.
I think for most of it, he's alive. He's just...
Eventually.
I mean, yes. He obviously had to get the stepmother pregnant somehow.
Yes. That is a necessary act of having a baby, especially in this dark fantasy world.
Yes.
If I remember correctly, he was kind of like...
Absent?
The baron of the island or something. So he was very, like, politically active. So a lot of the times he was, like, visiting other cities or countries, if I remember correctly.
So also not a role model for fatherhood.
Not a role model for fatherhood. What we're learning here is just be present with your children. Show them you care about their dreams, about all of their siblings
both, like,
passing away.
Demonic influenced dreams as well as real life.
You need to love and support your children.
Definitely. That should be the theme of this podcast.
Yes.
The main character is the person that we're like kind of piloting behind the eyes of for the entire book. Did you feel like she was relatable in this circumstance where like these kind of like terrible and magically horrific things were happening to her family?
Kind of, because at first she is also excited because there's things happening, and like whenever the good things happen she's excited and she's loving it, and then she like I'm a very realist person, mm-hmm. and so her sisters kept going dancing every single night and losing sleep, and she's like, I don't want to lose sleep. I'm going to stay at home.
It was fun for the first time, but guys, you need your 8 hours. That's fair. The older you get in life, the more you're like, oh no.
How many people were on the island?
Oh.
Like, do you have a sense for how big the...
I have no idea how big the island was.
It felt a little like
small,
somewhere between small fishing village and like medium-sized town, but medium-sized town in like the olden days. They didn't know every single person's name, but they knew generally who everybody was.
Okay, so a little smaller than Baytown then.
Yeah.
I had a thought for fences and I can't remember what my question was.
Oh no, I'll ask another question.
Can you tell us like where it's set?
It's I don't believe they
And
ever...
I have a stupid question too. Like, this is post segregation, right?
I think it's 60s, so it's like in the middle of turmoil.
Okay.
It's I believe kind of spoiler, there's a reason why they date a certain year.
Oh, like they set it at a very particular time on purpose?
There was like basically a fast forward to a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
And time is 1965, which is when the moon landing occurred, I believe.
Okay.
And
1969.
Yeah, and 1964 was when Jim Crow laws were lifted, I believe.
Okay.
So it was not post-segregation. It was, like, happening in the middle, except for the very last scene.
Okay,
interesting. Could you at any point tell, and this is for Lacey, that The House of Salt and Sorrows was the author's first book? Did you get a sense for that, or did it feel polished?
It was amazing reading it. I would mm-hmm. have never guessed. Writing a book for the first time, whether or not, I think it mostly depends on how imaginative and how much passion you put into the book. Because if you can write with passion and thought and you put all your hard time and work into a book, I think you can really make it seem like you've done this multiple times before.
And did you feel like the world building? I know you don't know a bunch about the continent you were talking about. It was basically all set on the island. But did it feel like the world building was complete? Like, did it feel like these people belonged where they were and, like, they understood the larger, like, world? I feel like that can be hard sometimes in fantasy novels.
I feel like they knew there was a mainland other than their island, but I feel like they were more at home and they didn't really care for other people. They were like, this is our home, this is how we live, and these are our ways of living and how we will go on.
That makes sense for fantasy novels that are set in kind of like a fake medieval-esque time, because I feel like that's pretty normal for an island in the middle of the fake 1500s. They're not super worried about a lot of other things.
I know a book that has similar themes, I believe, to like young adult dark novels, and that has really good world building. Six of Crows is a really good recommendation.
Oh yeah, yes, yeah. That is that, and that one was very, very popular in the last year.
She's kind of risen. In fact, now she has Ninth House. It's the same
yes.
author, right?
Ninth
Which
House,
Lee
Bardugo. Bardugo. But yeah, she is a prolific writer
yes.
who I think people generally agree has a very good sense of like world building and fantasy architecture.
So Kathy, I have kind of an academic question for you. I'm guessing Highlands does something very similar to what Goose Creek does with their summer reading, and they're probably going to have you write some sort of paper or something.
I think there was an answer sheet that we had to write and then probably a page response.
Okay. If you were to write something on it, what topic would you explore?
If it was a free question type of essay, then I would probably write it on how familial relationships can be affected based on your role models and how active they are in the adolescent's life.
Mm-hmm.
Because out of all the characters that really spoke to me, Corey was Corey's Choi's son. He was the one that was most relatable inside of the story. And I would just probably write it from, basically the title of my essay would probably be like, how adolescents can relate to Corey and what they can learn from him or something like that.
Okay. Did you get choices to pick from, or did they just give you one assignment to read?
They gave us two books to read, so this is only one book, while the other one, I believe, is by Octavia Butler. It's Kindred, I believe.
Oh, Kindred is very good.
Yeah.
Okay. For Lacey, so this book, again, I read it, so I'm cheating a little bit. It has a lot of very like fantastical things, which you would assume in a fantasy novel, but is there anything in particular, nothing too spoilery, but that really stood out to you as like an interesting like magic quote unquote scene or experience that they had in the book? Because I know there's a bunch of like different weird stuff that happens.
Interesting.
Like anything that you read and you were like, whoa. Like either a good O or a bad O.
Like the youngest sister seeing the ghosts of the older sisters that had previously died and exactly how they died and the fact that she was drawing them.
Yes. I remember that part because that's even on the back of the book a little bit, I think, that it's like haunted or something. And I remember that because she's young enough that she hasn't seen any of, she doesn't even know any of the older sisters who had passed away already. So it was very creepy.
She had like never seen her because...
Yeah. She wasn't born or she was 1 year old or
yeah.
something. Yeah. So it like gave this very like chilling, creepy sense that this like small girl is drawing this like grotesque like image
kinda,
of someone
like,
she shouldn't even
gives
know.
Into that thing where it's like sometimes children will stare into the corner of a room or something and they'll point.
Children, cats,
yeah.
all you know, manner of
It's one of those things where you're like, what are you staring at?
Yeah,
seeing?
Like, definitely this, like, haunting is a good word. Like, this haunting feeling as opposed to, like, straight-up scary or thriller vibe. Like, it's this very, like, something is here. I don't know where it is, but I suspect it's coming for me.
Kathy, have you read, I'm guessing you've read other plays before, right?
Yes.
How does this compare to some of the ones that you've read? Either in the style of the dialogue,
it
or...
It makes more sense than most other plays I've read.
Really?
Yes, because I've read things like The Crucible before. By Arthur Miller, and it doesn't have really confusing language.
Oh.
Everything is very just well organized, and everything just makes sense, more cohesive than most other plays.
Yeah.
I've been to a few musicals before, too, and sometimes due to how they either, like, narrate the story or how well they articulate when singing or how, well they design the characters, sometimes I just get so confused because while I'm like, wow, great art is happening, I just don't know how this fits into
anything. I just don't know how. Now, would you say you're a play person? Like, do you really enjoy plays, or is it something that you're fine with reading them, but...
I very much enjoy theater and any type of play that has to either... Well, I enjoy plays and musicals because those are, like, distinctly different.
They're very different, yeah.
I wouldn't say that I'm the hugest theater geek or anything, but I definitely enjoy them.
Okay. Would you want to watch this performed?
Yes, I believe there's a movie from 2016 about fences.
Awesome. Oh, oh my gosh. Is that what that movie is based on? Because I'm now imagining in my head the cover of the movie, and I did not know it was based on a play.
It was Denzel...
Denzel Washington.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Surprised myself. I have a question. Oh. Would you read the book the other person reviewed?
Yeah.
I feel like I would.
Yeah?
It sounds very interesting.
Yeah, and especially, I love a short read, because I feel like you're more willing to step out of your comfort zone when it's something that you know is short, because you're just like, there's a book that's like 600 pages and it's a nonfiction book, and I keep being like, I should read that, but it's really hard to commit yourself to something that long.
Did you, because I know Fences is set in the 60s, did it still feel very relatable, or did you feel like you were in the 60s when you were reading it? Like, how much did that time period really influence?
They had elements of basically the 1960s thrown into it, and everything made sense in that timeline. I would just say that familial problems can transcend generations, so it felt very relatable.
There's nothing like reading about someone in a completely different generation and being like, oh, they felt like their parents didn't listen to them either. That feels good, I guess.
I mean, the only good thing about suffering is that you can relate to other people.
That's true. The universal condition.
All right. Well, that's everything I've got. So thank you guys so much for joining us.
It was so exciting to have a podcast with two, like, very different books.
Yes.
Normally we have, like, a theme or they read the same book, so this was very fun.
I love we have assigned reading and leisure reading,
too. Yes, that is also a very important representation.
And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye!